Okay, so I'll be talking about the Schwarzschild interior and looking at the loop quantization and what are the resulting dynamics that we get out of it. And I just want to mention this is in collaboration with Christian Bohmer, and he is also at the Institute of Cosmology and Gravitation at Portsmouth. So if you may have heard recently that there have been a lot of advances in loop quantum cosmology, and one of the exciting results that's come out in the previous year or two is that there's indications that the Big Bang singularity has been being replaced by a big bounce in the case of homogeneous and isotropic cosmologies. And it turns out we have a certain understanding and kind of an effective way, a phenomenological effective theory that can explain why this is occurring. And where it arises from is we take into account the fact that the Hamiltonian constraint is constructed using holonomies, etc. We find that it gives the explanation in the form of a modified Freeman equation, given right here, where you have, this is the classical term, this is the Hubble rate squared is proportional to the energy density, but then we have a quadratic and energy density correction term that's negative definite. And you can just see that if any time this energy density of the matter hits this critical density, then this term goes to zero, and you have the Hubble rate going to zero, which would indicate a bounce in the case of these models. Another interesting result is that the construction of loop quantum cosmology has been improved. And it's often referred to kind of colloquially as this new mu bar quantization versus the original mu naught quantization. And I'll kind of explain what this, why we say these little terms. But the end point of these new, the reason why we like this new construction is that it makes more physical sense when you look at the results. In particular, you have a good semi-classical limit, which you don't necessarily get out of this original quantization. And what we find is that this critical density ends up being Planckian in nature, Planckian in value, which is kind of what you might expect in a quantum theory of gravity. And so, of course, we want to talk about all sorts of singularities of classical GR, and so the next one you look at is the black hole singularity. And what's nice, the easiest step, next step you would look at is the interior of a Schwarzschild black hole. And the reason you look at it is because it can be treated as a Kantowski-Sachs cosmological model, which is then you can quantize just like a loop quantum cosmology model. And the original quantization is work by Ashtekar and Boyevold, and this is analogous to this mu-naught quantization of loop quantum cosmology. And so what we'd like to do is analyze the end results, just as we did right here for loop quantum cosmology. I'd like to do the same thing for this Schwarzschild interior. And one thing is that it's actually already been done in this original mu-naught quantization by Leonardo Modesto, and I think he'll be talking about that later today. What I'd like to talk about is take these improved results from the improved quantization of loop quantum cosmology and apply that to the Schwarzschild interior and see what we get out of it. That's not where I want to go. Okay, so just to describe the classical framework and why is the Kantowski-Sachs model, well, the way it works out, if you take the Schwarzschild metric and on the interior, if you just switch the temporal and radial coordinates, then you have what looks like a homogeneous model given in this form right here. So here's the metric. We have a latch here, and you only have, this is like the radial coordinate, and so you only have metric components that are function of t. And same thing here, this is the two-sphere metric, and so the metric component there is only a function of t. Now, in loop quantum gravity, we use triad and connection components. And so in this model, it turns out there will be two triad components, PB and PC, and two connection components, B and C. And they turn out to be canonically conjugate to each other. And so how you connect between the two is if you look at the metric, this GXX term is now just PB squared over PC, and the two-sphere metric component is just PC. Okay, and then we have a Hamiltonian framework, of course, since I have just the Hamiltonian written in terms of these connection triad variables. And once you go through the dynamics of this, you get the Schwarzschild solution. So if I choose a lapse of this form, which might look familiar, then I can show that the equations of motion are given here and here, and then the metric looks just like the Schwarzschild solution, just written in the interior form. Okay, so just to interpret the results, for one, we want to identify where the singularity in the horizon is in the classical setup. And the singularity is going to appear at t is equal to zero in these coordinates. And so you can see when you plug that in, you get PC equal to zero, and then this PV component also equal to zero. So this PC is kind of the two-sphere radius. So the singularity is, of course, when the two-sphere radius goes to zero. And then the horizon, on the other hand, is occurring at t is equal to 2m, which if you plug that in, you find it's just 4m squared here, and then PB is also zero there. And so we're going to need to use that when we talk about the effective dynamics. So in order to interpret the effective dynamics, what I'm going to look at, what I'm going to show is, first of all, how does the PC component behave, because that's going to determine the physical radius of the two-sphere that we're looking at. And also talk about radial geodesics, so like an infalling particle, for instance, and the actual geodesic for that. And so that's just given by the geodesic equation, which you can calculate from the metric in terms of these triad components. It just gives the behavior of the coordinate t parameter as a function of proper time here, tau, if you have a massive particle. And then this formula, this E here would be the energy infinity, and just this L just determines whether or not you have a massive or a massless particle. And so to interpret the dynamics, we'll actually calculate the two-sphere radius as a function of proper time for an infalling geodesic. Okay, so now turning to the quantum dynamics and how I'm going to describe the results, is that we want to incorporate the Kalamy nature of how you construct the Hamiltonian constraint operator. And I want to do that into an effective semi-classical description. So I'm going to be talking about semi-classical equations. It's classical equations of motion, but modified with quantum effects. And the end result is that the Kalamys of a connection just look like, roughly look like exponentials of the connection. So for instance, B, the Kalamy of B looks like e to the I B times some parameter delta B here. So it's just an exponential of the connection, where this delta B is like a Kalamy length parameter. And these are going to be play an important role in all the effects that I described. So these, what they actually do is they're a measure of how much the magnitude of the quantum corrections. So in particular, if you take the limit as these parameters go to zero, so if you shrink your Kalamys, then you'll get back the classical limit. Okay, and so this mu naught thing that I mentioned versus mu bar, so in the original quantization of the Schwarzschild interior, the loop quantization, these parameters were assumed to be just fixed constants, that you would have some method of constraining the value. And that's analogous to the loop quantum cosmology work we had. It's analogous to the parameter mu naught in the original work of LQC. And if you listen to Jorge's talk from yesterday, this delta parameters are just completely the same idea as this rho parameter. It's just a different label in his talk. And so, as I said, the more recent work, the difference is that now you assume that these delta parameters are no longer constants and that they can vary as a function of the triad components. So that's the mu naught work that showed up recently. And as I said, that gives better semi-classical limit and more physical results in loop quantum cosmology. So the end result after all this is that if I take the classical Hamiltonian and I quantize it using these holonomies, how I want to describe this effective semi-classical is just to describe a modified effective Hamiltonian where these connection components are replaced by their holonomy equivalents. So for instance, the connection component B now looks like sine of B times delta B divided by delta B. And as I mentioned right here, if you take the limit as the delta parameters go to zero, you just get back exactly the classical constraint. You get back the classical limit. Okay. So just to mention some caveats in this effective approach that I'm describing is that it's kind of a first step in analyzing what the true quantum corrections would be. And it's not a rigorous derivation of the effects. It's quite possible that there could be additional corrections. But in the case of loop quantum cosmology, in the case where there's a massless scalar field with a cosmological constant, it has provided an excellent description of the results. And so for this talk, what I'm interested in is describing these phenomenological effects of these corrections. It's not necessarily the final words, but it can be kind of a first step in describing what effects we might expect. Okay, and so, as I said, in this original kind of mu-naught quantization, where these delta parameters are constant, actually, this kind of effective Hamiltonian, it seems to agree with the results that Jorge described yesterday about the interior. I'm not sure exactly if it agrees exactly, but it looks qualitatively the same. And also a work by Leonardo Modesto has analyzed that in a few papers, and I think we'll talk about that today. But just to mention quickly the results, what happens is the singularity is avoided in this model. So this two-sphere radial metric component is actually bounded from below, and it never reaches zero. And it looks like a solution that starts off with a classical, that matches with a classical solution, actually bounces and then matches on to a different classical solution, where in general the mass of the other classical solution is different. Although there is some freedom to make it symmetric, as Jorge mentioned. But so now I want to go into the new results, and that's where we take these delta parameters to be non-constant. So in the loop quantum cosmology case, the actual form is that the mu bar parameter was just some constant divided by the triad component to the square root, or the, in that case, it's just the scale factor. And the method of constraining it was by shrinking the loop of the Hamiltonian constraint, the Hwanami loops that you use to define it. You shrink those to have the minimum area, and that sets this parameter, capital delta, equal to the minimum area of loop quantum gravity. Now, in our case, the Schwarzschild interior is now an anisotropic model, and so there are more possibilities for ways of doing it. In loop quantum cosmology, you're pretty much forced into that choice. So I'll just describe two interesting schemes, and one I think is the most natural is this kind of geometric approach where you just take the classical area of the Hwanami loops and constrain them to have the minimum area. And you just get these form of these delta parameters, both of them depending on the triad components in this form. But there have been, some people have advocated an alternative approach where this area is kind of dependent on the transversal Hwanami of the constraint operator. But I won't go into much detail, but you get just a slightly different form. But that, in the work recently of Martin, Dan Carden, and Gaurav Khanna, they looked at a stability analysis of these two approaches in terms of the difference equation, and they seem to favor the first approach as being more stable. But just to mention that in this alternative approach has been applied in the Bianchi 1 model by Dawei Chu last year. And I won't really go into detail of what the results are of this case because it actually becomes, they're quite similar to the constant delta case. So I just want to focus on the first one since it has qualitatively different results. So again, we just take this effective Hamiltonian. I can go through equations of motion and just analyze what I get in the end. I don't have an analytical solution because it's a little bit complicated, but we can do a numerical integration. And I've just plotted here the two-sphere metric component here as a function of coordinate time t. And what we see is that it matches the classical solution in this regime, but then actually bounces here, but then undergoes kind of damped harmonic oscillations and actually approaches a fixed value as you approach what would have been the classical singularity. And so, once again, it is non-singular. We're not approaching the singularity. But quite interestingly, it approaches a different solution to the classical GR equations of motion, which is what's called a Neri-type solution, which is a solution of classical GR where you have a constant two-sphere radius but the inclusion of matter with a cosmological constant. This is the Neri solution right here. Okay, so if I do the radial geodesic and I integrate that, I have here a plot of the geodesic. What we find is that this black line is a classical solution. This would just show that in finite proper time, a classical particle would just hit the singularity. But in our case, this geodesic follows a classical singularity, but then undergoes these damped oscillations and then finally approaches this fixed value of PC. So the way I interpret it is the particle would go in, see a shrinking two-sphere radius, but then settle in at a finite radius after undergoing these oscillations. In terms of what is the value of this radius, if we take this parameter delta and constrain it to be the minimum area, as in loop quantum cosmology, we find that this two-sphere radius is on the order of the Planck length. Well, the two-sphere radius is on the order of the Planck length, so this metric component is on the order of Planck length squared. Okay, and that turns out to be independent of what the mass of the black hole is that you're looking at. And so one way to interpret it is it looks like gravity is behaving repulsively. And this is kind of similar to the results of loop quantum cosmology, where the repulsive gravity leads to a bounce in the cosmological case. One thing I do want to mention, that in this sort of quantization, we also find that if you trace it back to where the horizon is, you can find also deviations from the classical behavior there. So we're not quite clear of how we want to interpret this. And it may be that it's just a problem with the quantization scheme, or the approximation that we're, this effective approximation that we're looking at. or maybe we might not trust the Kutovsky-Sachs approximation there, or possibly that a boundary matching is more complicated. Maybe you don't want to match to exactly to a classical solution. Okay, so to finish up, I think the really nice result is that, and these are kind of preliminary results, but each one of these cases that we've looked at so far seems to indicate that the singularity is resolved dynamically. And at least I'm kind of optimistic that at some point when we do a more rigorous analysis, we'll find that loop quantum gravity in this Schwarzschild black hole is actually resolving the singularity, which is extending the results of loop quantum cosmology. But as I've shown, the detailed consequences, what is replaced with the black hole can depend on the quantization. And so we've seen kind of two interesting outcomes so far. One is this kind of where you match up two black holes, which is in some sense kind of like a wormhole, but it's not entirely clear that it is a wormhole, but it is like two matched black holes with each other. And the other is this asymptote in this nearby type space-time where infalling particles would just be trapped at a finite Planckian radius. Of course, since I'm just talking about a simple effective theory, our ultimate aim is to actually do a more rigorous justification, more rigorous analysis, and that would be done by analyzing the quantum theory itself and constructing semi-classical states and describing the dynamics. But additionally, I think in the future, what would be very nice is to look at these inhomogeneous spherically symmetric models, where you can describe both the exterior and the interior, the quantization of the whole space-time. And for instance, the work that Jorge mentioned yesterday, it's possible to use these same techniques to analyze that situation. And ideally, we'd of course want to investigate true collapse models and see what happens to the singularity in that case.
Okay. Questions? Do you have an idea about the maximum entropy is when you are super?
In which case? In this case?
Yeah.
And you want to say, what is the maximum anisotropy? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you have two different peak components, so that is the one. And the question, in general, of course, anisotropy is what we are going to do from these models. Can you give a solution in such a way that it is worth to ask from the
I don't know, because the solution's not very isotropic. The PV component has a completely different behavior. Even classically, it's...
It would be a very special solution, but at least to see what's happening in that case. Well, in that case, you couldn't wait for the other
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess you'd have to look exactly into the solutions. I'm not sure how long you can actually expect it to be isotropic. And maybe a very short period and not really give you a whole lot of information. But I don't know exactly.
What I see in this study, it was actually, I think it was doing quantum evolution. It was doing kind of shooting things from past horizon. And then when I choose the boundary dimensions appropriately to get the data, just shoot for data and see what happens.
I mean, that's ideally why we like to look at some quantization as a whole, covers the whole space-time, and not just these kind of patch two separate quantizations together.